It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, co-editors at Eat the Steak. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, teacher.
Good morning, class. What did you each bring in for show and tell today?
I brought a poisoned apple, teacher.
I wish I'd known that 5 minutes ago.
I brought a whole bag full of spitballs.
We're kind of an unruly crowd.
Yeah, we are, and but we'll get calmed down here in a sec. So, and nothing actually calms us quicker than, I guess, finding out what the heck happened this week in Iraq.
Yeah. We're going to start out with this week in Iraq because we're going to move to the local election stuff. I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, with our presidential election here in the United States, there have been all these polls coming out just about every hour about who's ahead and who's, you know, is it neck and neck now and who's got 1 point lead on the other candidate.
And some of those polls are really deeply flawed, too.
Oh, yeah. And the U.S. government is doing much the same thing in Iraq. They're starting to take polls about the situation in the run-up to the Iraq elections in January. Now, there was a poll done in Iraq from September 24th to October 4th of about 2,000 people, which makes it a very small poll, by the way. And they asked Iraqis, you know, what is your confidence in the government? Do you think things are improving? And in June, more than half of the respondents had said that, yes, they thought things were improving. But in September, about 42%. So Iraqis' confidence in the interim government is falling pretty precipitously.
And now, is this a telephone poll? Because that would very much skewer the results.
No, it was a face-to-face poll.
Okay.
Where they sat down face-to-face with people and asked them these questions. Now, that number started to fall pretty rapidly when U.S. troops invaded the city of Najaf and started bombing the crap out of the old city center of Najaf. So that shouldn't be surprising to anybody. They also asked Iraqis to name the issues most important to them, and I thought folks might find this interesting in light of what many Americans say are the most important issues for them. 100% of Iraqis said security was their top issue. 80% said that they were also concerned about the economy. 58% said quality of life, which for Iraqis means things like having electricity on that they can access 24 hours a day, having safe drinking water. About 1 in 3 urban households in Iraq lacks safe drinking water, and about 3 in 5 rural households are without it. 38% of those polled said that they were concerned about politics. But interestingly enough, about 85% said that they really wanted to vote in the upcoming election, which I think is a positive indicator that people around the world, especially in Iraq right now, have faith in democracy and want to participate in the political arena. Now, the poll went on to ask Iraqis which candidates they would vote for, because the upcoming election in January, if it actually occurs, because of the security situation, if it actually does occur, would elect candidates for an assembly that would then sit down and write a permanent constitution for the government. So they asked them about various national candidates on the national scene, whether they or not they would vote for them to sit on this assembly. And about 51% of the candidates, the vast majority, said that they would vote for Abdulaziz al-Hakim, who is the leader of the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. Now, that group gets its funding from Iran. It had some support from the U.S. prior to the invasion as an Iraqi exile group. The Supreme Council is known also for being fundamentalist Muslim, and they're predominantly Shiite group. Now, 47% of the respondents said that they would vote for Ayad Alawi, who is the interim president, or not the interim prime minister at the moment. 46% said that they would vote for Muqtada al-Sadr. So he has some incentive to become a candidate for the upcoming elections. Only 15% said that they would vote for Ahmed Chalabi, and more than half of them said that they were deeply opposed to him running. Now, the interesting part of it is that the largest number of respondents said that they would vote for candidates from the Dawa Party. the Dawa Party is another Shiite group. They are also a Shiite religious party, and they also receive funding from Iran. So this is... This puts a little crimp in the Bush administration plans to have a government that is not influenced by Muslim religious groups. It looks pretty likely that those folks would be very, very popular, particularly among the Shiite community. Now, oddly, the poll omitted Iraqi President Ghazi Yawar, who is leader of Iraq's largest Sunni tribe, which gives you probably some indication of where the Bush administration is heading with the elections, that the election, they're expecting the elections to be held primarily in the Shiite southern half of the country, and that most of the Sunni triangle would not take part. I think that's a sign that this poll that this poll is an indicator of. Now, the New York Times this week also reported, finally, that the Iraqi insurgency consists mostly of Iraqi nationalists, and that foreign terrorists are not a major concern in Iraq. Now, the Pentagon analysts and the military analysts that they talked to said that they thought the insurgents were 80% Iraqi nationalists. I think the number is probably closer to 95%, that the Muslim fundamentalist militias, including al-Zarqawi's group, probably make up about 5% of the insurgency. Interestingly, they also told the New York Times that they thought the insurgents had unlimited funding from donors in Saudi Arabia and that the money was coming across the border through Syria. Now, when I read that, I laughed, because really this is these military analysts and intelligence guys sitting down and pretty much coming up with what they think. You know, they're pretty much making educated guesses here. And the way that
or
you
not
can,
educated guesses,
yeah, or uneducated guesses, because the way you can tell that is by simple deduction. I mean, if the insurgents, first of all, if the insurgents had unlimited funding, they wouldn't still be fighting with roadside bombs, mortars, and RPGs. They'd have their own helicopters, et cetera, and they wouldn't have a dearth of troops to put up against ours. Now, excuse me. Now, in addition, you have to look at the claim that they have funding from donors in Saudi Arabia in terms of the Bush administration claiming that the insurgency in Iraq is mostly foreign terrorists related to al-Qaeda. Excuse me. Because that's the theory about al-Qaeda, is that it had unlimited funding from donors in Saudi Arabia. And then Syria is on the State Department's list of terrorist nations. So that's where they come up with this notion that the unlimited funding is flowing across the border from Syria, et cetera, when I think, in fact, that's probably not the case, that it's Iraqi nationalists who are using a lot of improvised explosive devices still, and weapons that are left over from the Saddam Hussein era. Now, at the same time, the U.S. is trying to hold an international conference that's going to be held in November in Egypt to try and get nations around the world to commit troops to Iraq, particularly to help provide security for the upcoming elections. I think it's kind of interesting that the French government has stirred up a controversy in the lead-up to this conference by saying that they want not just the Iraqi interim government to be seated at the table in Egypt, but they also want the legitimate armed opposition in Iraq to have a seat at the table. And I'm sure that term, the legitimate armed opposition in Iraq, which is being used on a regular basis now by the French foreign minister and his employees, probably has George Bush shooting steam out of his ears every time he hears it. Now, the last thing I want to mention for this week in Iraq is that it's become pretty clear this week, some of the information that we've been getting about the troop training, Iraqi troop training, and the dissolution of the Iraqi military after the invasion, that the Bush administration did have a plan, unlike what John Kerry is saying. The Bush administration did have a plan for how to deal with Iraq in the post-Saddam era. The problem was that they didn't stick to the plan. Donald Rumsfeld actually listened to Pentagon advisors who told him, look, you could have an insurgency. You need to take certain steps to avoid that. You need to employ the Iraqi military after the invasion. You need to put them to work. And he turned around and he threw that plan out the window, and he let Ahmed Chalabi via Paul Bremer persuade him that it was okay to send the Iraqi military home, to put them out of jobs, and to let them form the backbone for an insurgency. So it's I find it kind of fascinating that this information is coming out now, just before the election. I think that says something about how dissatisfied people within the Pentagon are about the current administration, that they're saying, look, we made all these elaborate plans to put the Iraqi military to work, to use them after Saddam was overthrown, and those plans were thrown out the window for ideological reasons.
I also found it fascinating that that we were talking about how the United States is appalled that all the poll leaders in Iraq have religious motivations, when here we have both Kerry and Bush in the debates, you know, pandering to the religious vote by talking about how deeply religious they are, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, yes. And then we have articles in the press about how Catholics are lining up to vote for Kerry, et cetera, as if anyone really cares, the religious affiliation of people who are voting for different candidates. I mean, I think that's an absolute and idiotic sideline.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the ad. Buddhists for Bush.
You might not find any.
It's a very Zen kind of thing.
All right. Well, we are just less than a couple of weeks away now from our own elections here in the States. That.
Yeah, we and as we do every time elections come around, we have our own picks with Eat the State as to who folks should consider at the polls, and the usual caveats that this is you know, one opinion of many, and you should do your own research and make up your own mind as to, first of all, whether to vote, and if so, who to vote for. There are a lot of things on the election other than the presidency this time around, and so and many of them quite important. So we're going to split this up over the next couple of weeks, so you won't be overwhelmed from week to week, and start maybe with the elected offices this week around, and start with the presidency. And I don't think there's a whole lot of disagreement that that Kerry is our man, although it comes with some ambivalence. I'm really not that sold
on
Kerry.
We sort of have to flog ourselves to vote for this guy, but. Anybody but Bush at this point.
Well, it's not just anybody but Bush, but the idea, Kerry can do something that Ralph Nader cannot, that David Cobb of the Green Party cannot. He can actually beat Bush, and that's not just an anybody but Bush vote, but it's also a repudiation, so that in the future, it's sort of the opposite of a voter mandate, where you will have a perception that the reason Bush lost was because he engaged in a reckless, dishonest invasion of another country. It's a disincentive for future presidents to engage in this kind of behavior. Yeah, so I think it's really important that Kerry win, if at all possible.
Yeah, and that we should vote for him with the notion that we're going to be in the streets the day after telling him what we don't like about his policies.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of work to do in the next 4 years, regardless of who wins. There's no question about that.
I just want to say I'm actually doing a write-in for Ahmed Chalabi for president, because he's demonstrated
he's got all the qualities.
He's demonstrated he can get things done in Washington.
Yes. that's good. I like that. Okay, so next we have U.S. Senator Patty Murray is running against Neanderthal George Nethercutt. Murray, I'm not that pleased with either. She did have a sort of unexpectedly courageous vote against the war in Iraq, but primarily she spent 12 years in office now snuggling up to the Democratic fundraising machine and really not doing much else. She has very little to show for her 12 years.
She was one of the major brokers on that disastrous airplane leasing deal that is now fallen through because of legitimate concerns in the government about the waste involved.
Yes, she would like very much to be the senator from Boeing. Ethics be damned.
Yes.
Fortunately, there is another person running in this race. It's a Green candidate, Mark Wilson, and he's been running a pretty spirited independent campaign for the last couple of years. He's a sort of mainstay of the Kitsap Veterans for Peace. I think he's been on this program in the past.
He has indeed.
Yeah, and so that's my recommendation for the senator is Mark Wilson. U.S. Representative, there's really only one competitive race in this area. All the Democratic incumbents, Jim McDermott and Jay Inslee and Norm Dix and Adam Smith and all those, are pretty much going to coast to re-election. The one contested race is the open seat in the 8th District on the east side, where Dave Ross is going up against Sheriff
Dave Reichert.
Dave Reichert. And Reichert is he doesn't know very much. He's got a really nice shiny head of hair, but he really doesn't have a whole lot going on inside it. Whereas Dave Ross is independent, which is good, I guess. You don't want somebody following the party line, but the way in which he's independent is probably much more toward the center. Nonetheless, it's a seat that has historically been Republican that Jennifer Dunn is vacating, and if we can get one over to the Democrats, it's probably a good thing. So Dave Ross for Congress, Governor. This is another case where the two main parties' candidates are not all that appetizing. Christine Gregoire is sort of more of Gary Locke. Whereas Dave Rossi is sort of more of John Carlson, only with a nicer smile. And I'm actually going to go out on a limb on this one and suggest Libertarian Ruth Bennett, who's actually one of the better candidates the Libertarians have had in the past. I've actually endorsed her for other races in the past. She's from the wing of the party that is not capitalism uber alles, that has a social conscience, that talks about the war on drugs and civil liberties and whatnot. So I'm going to suggest her rather than Christine Gregoire, because I'm just not sold on Gregoire.
Yeah, me neither.
We have a lieutenant governor, which I'm going to go with the Libertarian on this one also, for the simple reason that the lieutenant governor is a meaningless office that should really be abolished, and the Libertarians seem to be the only ones who actually want to abolish this office. It does nothing other than preside over the state Senate and serve in the case that the governor is incapacitated. And other than that, it's an office that consumes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for no particular reason. However, there is also a Green running in this office. His name is Bern Hagerty, and you might consider voting for him. But let's face it, a cushy, nepotistic kind of job is, just because it's going to a friend of yours is no excuse for having the job. It still shouldn't be there. Secretary of State, we have Republican Sam Reed, who has done a more or less competent job in office. Endorsed him last time, actually, but he has been kind of slow on the uptick in talking about touchscreen voting and the dangers of electronic voting. And his opponent, Laura Ruderman, has been very good on that issue. She sort of made it the centerpiece of her campaign. Again, there's a Libertarian in this race, Jacqueline Passy, and she's also been not only good on touchscreen voting, but has also been talking about instant runoff voting as something that would be desirable to have. So Ruderman will probably be the one we endorse here, simply because if you're going to hold the manufacturers of these touchscreen voting machines accountable, that's probably not something that's consistent with Libertarian philosophy. But probably either one of those would be an improvement over Sam Reed, who just has not paid that issue the kind of attention and scrutiny that it deserves. We have state treasurer, where incumbent Democrat Mike Murphy should coast to re-election. State auditor is the same kind of situation with Brian Sontag. However, we have a very amusing situation here, because the Republicans weren't going to put up a candidate, and so a guy named Will Baker slipped in under the radar. Will Baker, for anybody who doesn't follow Tacoma City politics, is this kind of a nuisance gadfly type who keeps getting thrown out of Tacoma City Council hearings talking about these elaborate conspiracies. He's sort of our own version of who killed Kurt Cobain. and he's somehow slipped onto the state ballot as a Republican in the state auditor race. And if you read the voters pamphlet, you'll see just how out to lunch this guy is. It's all about who killed Crystal Brame and the wife of the fire chief who murdered her and then committed suicide. So he might be worth voting for just out of sheer amusement, but that's the state auditor's race. Attorney General Paul Richmond, who is the Green in this race, has dropped out. He didn't want to run against Deborah Senn, so we have a Deborah Senn versus Rob McKenna race, which is a real sharp contrast in ideology and style. Senn, the former insurance commissioner, is very much a people's advocate type who will make all the right enemies. Has already made all the right enemies with the anti-advertising campaign that she faced when she beat Mark Sidran in the primary. So, going to recommend
Deborah
Sidran.
She's facing another campaign too in the last week and a half or so, yeah, of her race from the state Republican or the Republican Leadership Council from out of state is funding like $1.5 million to run ads against her in these last 10 days or so.
Yeah, and I really think that's going to backlash. I think that's going to work in her favor because I don't think people appreciate campaigns like that.
No, but I don't either.
I had heard
but we'll find out.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce got involved with sending some more money into that after they got bid on the last one.
Yeah, well they were the ones who sponsored the primary campaign.
Nobody quite knows the list of actual donors for this particular campaign, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has given money to the Republican Leadership Council in the past. So.
Yeah, and they were sort of the front group for this.
Yeah.
In this case, for the last round of
financing, but
enabling
this time it's not
enabling
clear cut.
Yeah, enabling the actual. The actual sponsors to remain hidden, which is also really kind of a dubious practice. Mm-hmm. So next we have the Commissioner of Public Lands, and this is also a fairly clear-cut race. And the Commissioner of Public Lands is...
No pun intended.
Yes, exactly. No pun intended. But this is a much more important office than most people give it credit for. The Commissioner of Public Lands has stewardship over lands that are 4 or 5 times the size of King County. It's a great chunk of Washington State, and you have a Democrat in this race. Mike Cooper has been endorsed by all the environmental groups, and you have the Republican incumbent Doug Sutherland, who's been endorsed by all the rape and pillage types. And I don't know about anybody else at the table, but I think our vote goes with the environmentalists rather than the rape and pillage. So Mike Cooper for Commissioner of Public Lands. We have Superintendent of Public Instruction, where we have the current superintendent, Terry Bergeson, is facing her predecessor, Judith Billings. We have a slight preference for Billings in this race. She's been better talking about needing to have raises and better funding for teachers and classrooms, and also expressing some skepticism about mandatory testing in the WASL and wanting to take another closer look at that and how those tests are administered. So,
has she said anything about charter schools?
I'm not really sure how they come down on charter
schools.
Seems
to me that that's been absent from this race, which I think is one of the things that makes it kind of dismal. We should have better candidates for this race.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree with that. It's almost a toss up between the two of them. They're neither one of them great, but this was the slight preference, and there's nobody else running. So
yeah.
We have the insurance commissioner, where the Democratic incumbent Mike Kriegler is not as combative, not as much of an advocate as Deborah Sen was in this office, but he would certainly be better than his Republican opponent, John Adams, who, not to be confused with the second president of the United States, he's pretty much in the pocket of the insurance industry. So we would want the Democrat in that race, Mike Kriegler. And then we have all the state senate and state representative races, and in Seattle, which is the one party town, most of these races were decided in the primary where they were contested at all. With the exception of Bob Hasegawa in the 11th, they're almost all incumbents. The one exception where there is a race where there's a contestant other than a Democrat who's worth taking a look at is in the 46th in North Seattle, where Chris LaRoche is running as a Green. He's an Eat the State contributor, so we kind of like him a little bit just because we know him. But he's also running on an education platform in a district that's heavily University of Washington influenced and
he has his stuff together.
His stuff together.
And
yes.
When you say contributor, you mean as a writer as opposed to someone that's giving you money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
just
what
that
I mean.
I'd clarify. That.
Yes. So we want Chris LaRoche in the 46th, and other than that, you know, all of the different incumbents: Joe McDermott, Zach Hudgens, Helen Summers, Mary Lou Dickerson, Sharon Tamiko Santos, Frank Chopp, Eric Pettigrew, Ed Murray, Phyllis Kenny, you know. I really have a philosophy in all of these races where if there's not going to be any kind of substantive opposition, you just don't vote in those races because it's not really fair democracy, I don't think. So that leaves us with the judges and the initiatives. How are we doing on time?
Oh, we got just under 5 minutes, so I don't know.
Why don't we go ahead and talk about those next week then.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan. Well, then that bounces us back to an update on Kyoto and the Kyoto Protocol.
The Kyoto Treaty, Global Warming Treaty. Yeah, it passed the lower house in Russia, the Duma. They voted overwhelmingly to ratify the Kyoto Treaty. Now it just has to pass the upper house in the Russian parliament and then be signed by Vladimir Putin, which is pretty much a done deal. Putin says he will support it in the upper house. Pretty much follows his dictate. So it's looking like the Kyoto Treaty will come into effect. However, it's only the countries that have ratified it that the treaty will apply to, and the United States has not ratified it. Currently, the European Union is trying to put pressure on the United States to ratify, but of course the Bush administration will not do anything of the sort.
Neither will the Republican-controlled Senate.
Yes, that's very true. And so I'd like people to be thinking about that when you go to the polls, how important it is to try to put candidates into office who will actually vote for and support the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty. Now, on the other hand, I also want to point out, too, that there's been some recent science on the issue of global warming that seems to indicate that because of a drastic increase in greenhouse gases in the last year or two that does not seem to be linked to increased auto exhaust emissions or emissions from fuel and power plants or the burning of fossil fuels, that we seem to be entering into a period. They're not absolutely certain, but the theory is that we're entering into a period where the Earth has a feedback loop going on in the atmosphere, that there may be enough accumulated greenhouse gases at this point that the global warming may start to feed on itself without any extra additions from us. So that might be a little bit scary, and nobody quite knows whether we can come down from that situation or not.
That's not an excuse not to stop the emissions, though. We still need to try and cut back on those,
because feedback loops can be fed very quickly from adding more and more input, like more and more auto exhaust, etc. So, and nobody quite knows whether or not cuts in greenhouse gases might not bring us down from that kind of a situation or not. So it's something we should be thinking about, and global warming is not just something that's out there, you know, going to happen in 50 or 100 years. It's something that is going on right now, having an impact in third world countries and on the weather and on natural disasters right now, and something we should be working on right now.
Yeah, just talk to anybody in the South Pacific Islands that are, like, literally going underwater.
Or anybody who was flooded, who experienced the enormous, historically large floods in Bangladesh this year. Anybody who experienced the hurricanes in Florida and in the Panhandle.
Yep.
Anyone who's experiencing drought in Africa and other parts of the world where there have been record droughts.
Or the Midwest,
Midwest, or the Midwest in this country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, we're pretty much out of time. Talking once again with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State. And tell people where they can find Eat the State.
Eat the State can be found in bookstores, cafes, coffee shops, places where you can find free publications. We're also in the libraries here and on the east side. You can also find us on the web at our website, www.eatthestate.org. And if you have questions, comments, tips, you want to tell us how full of bull we are, you can give us a call at 206-903-9461. You can also call us if you want to become a contributor of any kind, either monetary or if you want to write for us or if you want to help us out just as a volunteer.
Yeah, and for people who are interested in those endorsements, they'll be in the issue that's coming out this coming Wednesday, and we'll be on our website also.
You also have your writing guidelines in every issue too, don't you?
Yes.
For people that are,
it's not in every issue, but it's on the website.
All right.
Right on the homepage, there's a link saying I think diner's guidelines or some cute phrase like that. That's what it is.
Yeah.
All right. Bon appetit.